Time for us to check in with our friend Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Chad.
Hello there, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. So, listen, I guess I was confused. I had heard some reports, I think I read some, that Tom Brady was going to be honored at Gillette yesterday, but I was watching CBS, so was he there?
He was there, all right, streaming on Patriots.com. Yeah, it's, I wrote about it, kind of got buried a little bit in the website, but I wrote about it later in the week that Channel 4 in Boston, where everybody down there watches the games, had requested with the NFL to be able to show the halftime ceremony, and it got nixed, and because they prioritized their national halftime show. You know, Boomer and Coach Cower slapping each other on the back, having some guffaws.
Mm.
They felt like that takes precedence in every market, even the ones that would much rather watch Tom Brady. So after a little back and forth, Channel 4 and sister channel 38, which hosts has the fifth quarter, their postgame show, got the NFL to let them show it in its entirety there. They were originally only allowed to show 90 seconds of it. So a small win, but, you know, just one more instance of the millions of the NFL being ridiculous about things when they don't have to.
Yeah, I did see some of that as well, and it was a great ceremony. And yeah, he seemed very genuine in his affection, obviously, with all those years there. But I've always thought any idea of a rift between Brady and Belichick, not that they saw eye to eye on everything, but I think each one understands what the other meant to their career.
Yeah, you imagine working for Belichick for 20 years. You know, it's going to go, there's going to be ups and downs sometimes. You're going to get sick of the guy once in a while. He's the greatest coach in football history. I still feel like he's an advantage on game day more than any other coach. But, you know, does things a particular way. And Tom wanted a little bit more money, which he certainly deserved, and a little bit more leeway and say, and didn't get it. You know, Belichick just sort of treated him like any other expendable player. And so there was a riff for a little bit, but sounds like fences were really mended after that Buccaneers game the first year. And all good now. And I don't think there was really ever any rift beyond what, you know, stuff Seth Wickersham, who I totally respect, reported in his book. It just was a breakup. And breakups are hard, but sometimes you when you have a great history of people, you get back together with them in a satisfying way.
Well, tough start to the game yesterday, but after that 16-0 deficit, Patriots played pretty well. Mac Jones had himself a very big day, 35 for 54, 316 yards, three touchdowns. He didn't quite pull off the Brady-esque comeback at the end, but I thought there were a lot of positives.
Hey, they have a competent offense. It's been a while.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like when you actually fake a handoff to one running back and hand the ball to the other one going a different direction. Creative things like that. Playing to the quarterback's strengths. Actually remembering that Hunter Henry and Kendrick Bourne are pretty good pass receivers. All these things that were sources of frustration last year when Matt Patricia was in charge. They're not going to be anymore. You know, there'll be ups and downs. Bill O'Brien's a good coordinator, but he's not perfect. And I'm sure there'll be games where we're frustrated with some of his calls, just like we were with Josh McDaniels or whoever, you know, Ernie Zampezi in 1999, whoever it was. But I think just you're breathing a sigh of relief right now that the Patriots look like they have an offense that may not have the highest end talent, but they have a lot of good players and they're going to be competently coached. And that's a huge upgrade over what we saw last year.
Yeah. I thought the offensive line was better than expected. And you mentioned Kendrick Bourne. He had an excellent day. You know, Mike Gesicki, a lot of different guys got involved in the offense. And that was nice to see. Ezekiel Elliott looks like he'll be a great addition.
Yeah. One fumble as a Patriot after none last year. That's tough, but You can see he's got a little bit. He's not washed up. You know, I think there was that perception because Dallas let him go and yards per carry fell to 3.8 last year. But he's crafty. He's still strong. He had a nice run on a third and one where he picked up 3 yards where he just blasted through the through the line. He's going to help. And they'll get more out of Stevenson, too, obviously. I mean, he was sick yesterday. He'd been dealing with a stomach bug and still ended up with a couple of nice plays later in the game, 32-yard run. I think they're in a good spot. They have a pretty diverse offense. If they can just hold the line together and get their starting guards back at some point, it feels like they've got something here.
And defensively, pretty solid. Judon had that big sack, but I thought the guys who stood out were the rookies, Keon White and Christian Gonzalez.
Yeah, Gonzalez, I mean, that's a tough matchup. A.J. Brown's listed at 6'1", but he looks about 6'5". And, yeah, runs like the wind, runs good routes, everything you'd want. Basically John Robinson got fired in Tennessee for trading him. And that's the first guy you're facing in your NFL career. And, you know, Brown had 7 catches, 79 yards, had a big one for 48 yards called back. But I thought Gonzalez really acquitted himself well. And the corner blitz was a beautifully designed and called play. Nobody saw it coming. He made the play, and then, of course, he broke up the pass on 4th and 2 and nearly had the pick. That's what you want to see. You know, there can't be an expectation that Gonzalez is going to be Sauce Gardner because he was just special from day one. Mm. But if he can come in and look like a genuinely high-quality starting cornerback at age 20, you've really got something that's going to be special down the road.
Were you in person, or were you watching the game like the rest of us schlubs?
I watched like my fellow schlubs, but you know, because I have to keep an eye on the TV aspect too. The Nance Romo, 14 people in the studio and the halftime show and things like that. So, got to watch that stuff too.
Yeah, how did you think Romo did yesterday?
He's still all over the map. It's like he's sitting on the couch talking to himself, and he doesn't know people are listening. There were a couple of things. I mentioned two in my column this morning, but there were many more that I just caught for space. Talking about how Bourne had a bounce back year last year. What is he talking about? Bourne was in the doghouse from day one because he was one of the first guys to recognize Patricia didn't know what he was doing. Things like that, just where he clearly does stuff just to talk. And I like him. You know, he's an engaging guy, and he's accessible. You know, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago for preview stuff, and you want to like him, but then he goes into the game and it just seems like it's all off the cuff, and it's frustrating because you know how good he can be.
Yeah, I mean, I thought his first couple of years he was great, but I think he prepared for those, and now he seems to be trying to coast on charm alone.
Yeah, there's a theory too. I know one of my friends in the Boston media was first mentioned this, that when he first started 7 years ago now, he had played against everybody. And gradually here, as the years have gone by, there's turnover in the league. Players don't have long careers, and new guys coming in, maybe he wasn't quite as up on them as, you know, he should have been with the guys that he had actually seen firsthand, that he didn't put the work in to really get to know, you know, the newcomers to the league that weren't around when he was playing.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, Red Sox made a little history over the weekend, getting 23 hits in a game and losing. That's the beauty of baseball. You can always see something you've never seen before.
You can, especially with these Red Sox. They're going to run the bases backwards one of these. Well, we've seen that with Jimmy Pearsall.
Right.
But
right.
Something crazy, you know, guy's going to get thrown out at all four bases in the same game. Or we've probably seen that with Verdugo through the years, actually, too. But yeah, they're in a weird place right now because they've reached that point of acknowledgement that the playoffs very, very, very likely aren't happening. And so sit on Rafael is getting time, and we'll see some of the, you know, Wilmer Abreu's showed some stuff here that might suggest he's a better prospect than people thought. Things like that. You're hoping they would play meaningful games in September. They're not going to be, but there's still always a few things to watch. Brian Bay will be running out there every few days, so that's nice.
Well, we won't see James Paxton. It looks like he's done. They'll shut him down for the year, and it was a great pickup for a half before he wore down. No big surprise. There's Chris Sale. He's Chris Sale. What do they do? Do you see them investing in some free agent pitchers? Because there are a few decent names out there this winter.
Boy, I'm skeptical of Haim. Yeah, I really am. I if I had to bet, I almost think he's not going to be back, because I know there's some frustration that he didn't pull trigger on a couple of potential deals at the deadline. And I can't see how his bosses look at him and say he's the guy who's going to go out and sign the pitchers plural that they need. He just hasn't shown that indication to spend money on the high-end talent. And I know he signed Story, but Story was a guy whose value was down because people knew he had a damaged elbow. He signed Yoshida to a contract that most other teams thought was absurd, but it wasn't that much money. And you're also kind of seeing here a little bit, Yoshida's a nice player, but you're seeing why other teams had some skepticism. He's basically a two-tool player. He doesn't run, doesn't field, doesn't throw. And the power kind of comes and goes, too. He's just a good hitter and a good on-base guy. But I don't know if he's the guy who's going to go out and identify Aaron Nola as the starting pitcher to sign, or Zach Wheeler, or whoever it happens to be that they decide is someone capable of coming in and being at the front of the rotation. He just seems more interested in, you know, picking up guys with 5.5 ERAs that might have, you know, good break on their, good spin on their slider or something.
Well, and Alex Cora on so many occasions this year has made reference to, well, this is the roster we have. These are our guys. And clearly he's frustrated. So if ownership has to choose between Cora or Bloom, I feel like I know which way they'd go.
Yeah, he can't come out and say, why do I have these AAA losers here?
Right.
Sometimes it feels like he's saying that. The Kyle Barraclough one, especially, yeah. You know, that was their white flag, and he's a guy who's really not a major league pitcher at that point. I know, tough to maintain organizational depth over the course of a season, but pretty much all Haim Bloom has done in his role as the de facto, he's not the GM, but you know, de facto baseball, head of baseball operations, is bring in organizational depth, and really not much more than that. He's done okay with the veterans on the short contracts. You know, Turner's a good signing for sure. Duvall's been a good one. I think everybody likes Kenley Jansen and Chris Martin. Those things have worked out, but they're not sustainable. They're all older players, and they're all coming fairly cheap at this point in their careers. So I just don't know if the Sox are serious about getting back to the playoffs, whether the guy in charge right now should continue to be the guy in charge.
Yeah, you have written about him on social media. I know you were a big Jimmy Buffett fan. Have you heard any of the new music that he recorded shortly before his death?
I saw the Paul McCartney recommendation, which is just so nice and kind of him to say and tell him a couple. Who knew Paul McCartney was such a great storyteller, right?
But yeah,
he told some stories about their friendship that was cool and recommended his song "Bubbles Up." But I just been buried in the old stuff here. I actually had meant to do like a Facebook post of my 25 favorite songs after a lot of research the last few days, but haven't got around to it with actual work getting in the way, but maybe I will.
It was fun. We had Gary Tangway on the other day, and he told a story that I had forgotten. This was back in the, I think the early 80s when Gary was working for me, and I reached out to MCA Records and set up a meeting with Gary Tangway and a buddy of his and Buffett when they played at the Cumberland County Civic Center.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
How'd that go? Every story you ever heard about Buffett was that he treated people well.
Oh, Gary said that he talked to him for about 20 minutes, said he was a great guy.
Well, that's way longer than anyone needs to talk to Gary. So that's
exactly.
Again, Jimmy Buffett's a saint.
Extraordinary patience on his part right there. What's your all-time favorite Buffett song?
Oh, probably A Pirate Looks at 40, but I like Banana Republic, which Steve Goodman actually wrote, but I love Buffett's version of that. And Trying to Reason the Hurricane Season, a whole bunch. Cowboy in the Jungle is one I really like. I could do a top 10 probably really easily, and just the hard part would be figuring out how to order them.
And, you know, I know I've seen the Parrot Head phenomenon. I've been to see him in concert. But I was surprised at the depth of the reaction to his passing from so many people, not just in the music industry, but from all quarters.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was. It was kind of heartening. It seemed like he knew everybody, which I didn't know that. You know, and of course he was pretty commercialized, but it seemed like he's remained the same guy, you know, he's willing to help people out and, you know, have a beverage or two or three with anybody who crossed his path. Mm-hmm. I saw him three or four times down in Great Woods in the 90s. You know, we hadn't gone that much recently, but I have a buddy who's seen him over 100 times. And wow. I was like, how does your liver withstand that?
That'll do it right there. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, great talking with you. As always, thanks for being with us this afternoon. We'll catch up with you soon.
Great talking to you, Rich. Take care.
Chad Finn here on Downtown.